There's nothing better coming back after summer break, catching up with old friends. Today, we're catching up with an old friend of mine, old teammate of mine, Mika Zibanejad.
I'm coming in for my shot. We go left wing, right wing, center, and I get my shot right at the end of the warm-up. And it's such a late, like, it's probably one of my hardest shots, but I hit Hank right in the forehead. And it's before game five, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I done? This is my first year. I'm still not really talking to Hank right at this point. Like, I'm like, oh no, the guy I've been watching for so long, and no chance. So I don't really know, like, do I go up and say something, or like, I have embarrassed myself. Like, yeah. I know he's so focused on the game too. So I'm like, oh, I'll just wave a little bit and then kind of curl back. That's the game. I score the overtime winner. And that's after the game. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He goes, you can do it anytime as long as we win and you score. I'm like, all right. I like that plan, but I wasn't doing it again. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Great guy. Great conversation. I mean, what a peaceful dude.
Yeah. He's calm.
He's calm.
He is calm. Yeah. We really try to scratch the surface a little bit and understand what gets him going. And can you rattle that guy? I don't know.
I don't know.
He feels calm all the time. But obviously, I had an opportunity to play with him for so many years. I love his game, what he's become.
Yeah.
He's one of the best players in the game today.
I mean, amazing. All-star last year. Definitely the quiet leader of the Rangers now until perpetuity. He is the real deal.
And there's so many layers to him. You know, obviously, the music, DJ Mika. Yeah. We're going to get into that. All of that.
All of it. So enjoy Club 30 with Mika Zibanejad.
He's playing in his 13th year in the NHL, 8th with the New York Rangers. If you don't watch him skating around at Madison Square Garden Ice, you might catch him play some music as a DJ at a festival nearby. He's a good friend. Welcome to Club 30. NHL superstar Mika Zibanejad.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me here, Mika. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
You like that intro? I kind of worked
perfect
on it this morning.
That was great.
In the shower.
Yeah, I really felt like you put a lot of thought into that. It was really brand new and stuff I haven't heard. So that was
Hank always stresses about the intro. You know, yes.
Set the tone.
Yeah, set the tone.
Well,
yeah.
Listen, first off, congrats, baby girl.
Thank you.
This summer. How does it feel? Are you used to being a dad?
Yes and no. I think both me and Irma, my wife, looked forward to this. A lot of people asked me about, oh, are you prepared? Are you ready? I don't know. I honestly didn't know until it happened, but it's definitely life-changing, even though it's been a couple of weeks. But it's just been awesome to see her and to come home to her and just feel like we started our little family together now. So that's something that I've been super happy with.
Anything that surprised you so far, having a baby?
Honestly, not having a problem, like for me, not having a problem changing diapers that like quickly really surprised me. Yeah. I thought it was going to be a little iffy to start. I feel like every day is just like another day where she does something that I haven't seen or whatever. So yeah. I think every day is a little bit of a surprise and see how she is and what she does. So, but yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun.
Jay, you're what, a couple months ahead of Mika. Do you have any advice for the rookie?
Well, kind of. Obviously, expectations are way different. You can prepare all you want and read all the books that you can, but nothing really prepares you when you're in the moment.
Yeah.
And so much of your stress, you're basically just waiting for the next kind of the meltdown to happen or the next moment where you don't know what to do. I always thought it was silly when I would see Instagram posts of like a 1 month birthday or a 2 month birthday or 3 month birthday. And now that I'm a dad, I totally get it because those 30 days are a complete battle and you should celebrate the fact
that still alive.
She's still alive and she's still healthy, you know? So now I completely get why people post every month.
And you're still alive.
And I'm still alive.
When you need help with kindergarten, application for school, even middle school, just give me a call. I'm dialed in right now. Even like being the bus driver.
Yeah, Hank, you're the best chauffeur in New York right now.
Dropping off, picking up. Yeah, get back to me. It's important to have that preparation and routine.
So you're saying there's hope for us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's awesome. It's awesome for you guys to experience this. I want to move in, talk about hockey. Shocker. You're on your 8th year with the Rangers. And obviously a lot has changed with the team, with yourself. How do you feel things have changed for you approaching this year now compared to when you arrived 8 years ago? What's different?
I mean, I would say not knowing as much, obviously knowing about the Rangers coming in here and know the history and the whole organization and stuff. I think that was brand new coming in here and also coming in as a 23-year-old, still trying to figure the league out and figure out my own spot. But there's a lot of new impressions. And then obviously compared to now, it's you gain experience every year, not just on the ice, but off the ice, how things work and what the expectations are and just your life outside of hockey too. Mm. Living in the city, we still haven't had really a single talk about moving away from the city. So just figuring that out together and myself. And I think it's just trying to find your own way within the structured and sometimes unstructured chaos that is living in New York and playing with the Rangers. So.
Yeah, a lot of guys live outside the city now. Mm-hmm. But for you,
no chance.
It's in the city. Why? Yeah. Why do you want to live here?
Honestly, like we have the airport out there in Westchester and the practice facility and stuff. For me, it's just I'm from Stockholm. Lived basically in the city for some time growing up and just having everything close. I think it's somewhat familiar feeling being in the city.
Yep.
To home and having my wife from Stockholm as well, knowing that it just fits us better. And obviously I say that now, but we'll see when the baby's a little bit older. Yeah, but yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've seen, I mean, you've done it. So there's a lot of people that had their families in the city. So I
just love the access you talked about. Yeah. If you want to do it.
It's not,
I know your schedule, you know, it's busy, the practices, the games, the travel.
Yeah.
So you definitely have weeks where you don't really explore the city, but just knowing that it's right outside and the easy access to everything makes me, you know, you feel that energy, excites me, and I'm sure you feel the same.
Yeah.
And obviously it goes up and down how much you do explore the city during the season.
Yeah, and I think it's just having the, like you said, the access right outside, like you walk outside and then you have the opportunity rather than to have to, if you want to come to the city from out there, then you have to plan on it and then you can't really be spontaneous in that way. Sometimes you need that as well. But I think it's for at least for me, it's been creating the calmness at home, like coming home and find that like we can be calm at home, even though there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. You don't mind the drive every morning to practice?
I honestly don't. It's sometimes it sucks when the traffic is really bad and you're kind of on the cusp of being late. But no, I like for us being Swedes too, the time change is perfect because I call everyone on the phone and an hour there, an hour back. I know you drove for 30 minutes.
I love the drive. It was like me time.
Yeah.
It was quiet. And like you said, you had an opportunity to call friends overseas or even just reflect on the game yesterday or the game tomorrow. It was that time where nobody really bothered you.
Yeah.
So I actually miss driving. Sometimes I have to come up with something. You know what? I need to go out for a drive now and come up with something just to be in the car. I love it.
Yeah.
But you touched earlier on expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that has changed a lot too since you came here. You're one of the best players in the game now. The fact that people are expecting a lot from you means that you're a great player.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you almost have to embrace that pressure and see it as a great thing. Honestly, I miss that. I tell people now when I'm retired, and they're like, what do you miss about hockey? I'm like, yeah, I miss playing, competing, but I also miss that pressure of, you know, you have to go out there and do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people depend on you and the pressure. I feel like I didn't think when I retired that would be the thing that I miss almost the most.
Yeah.
But yeah, really embrace that pressure and see it as a great thing, right? But that's why I think this city is so good too, because people care so much so you can feel the pressure.
Yeah, and I think that a little bit what you said about that, it's a privilege to have that pressure. And I think sometimes people deal with the pressure differently, obviously. But I think as a player, when I reflect on it, I think the expectation and the pressure of us winning every year kind of also puts pressure on ourselves as an organization to put ourselves in a spot where we can win.
Mm.
And I mean, you played long enough to know how hard it is to win. Like, how often do you get a chance? Like, last year, obviously, we fell short. The year before that, we're not far off from making it to the finals. So you never know when your next chance is going to be. And I think that that pressure kind of adds up to making sure that we do everything from player to coaches to management, that mm-hmm. everyone is doing everything that we can to win. And does that mean that you're going to win?
No.
Not all the time. But no. At least that gives you the best opportunity.
Yeah.
That's 90% of what you can ask for.
But does the pressure get to you? Like, to me, you always seem so calm. And this mm-hmm. is funny because I thought about that before we were sitting down here. You always felt older to me. Remember mm-hmm. how yes. many times we talked about your yes. age playing together? I always thought you were like 4 or 5 years older mm-hmm. because you're so mature, but probably also because you were in the league so early.
Yeah.
But have you always been calm, like even on the ice, off the ice?
I think so. I am a very calm person. Even at home, she's like, you have to speak up because I don't hear you. I'm like, thank you. But no, I think I am in terms of just some personality. I am like decently laid back when it comes to that.
What rattles you? When do you lose it? I haven't really seen it. You've probably seen me lose it a few times, but.
Yeah, no, I've been there. I think it's honestly when things are not going my way. Like that's when it's just, and I think that's because of the pressure I put on myself. Like I know I'm not going to sit here and say I want to be perfect because I know I'm not going to be perfect. So I think striving for perfect is like, it's almost sometimes for me useless. But yet again, when I'm thinking about my expectations and when I think about it, it doesn't matter. I just started cooking at home. I make a bad meal, I'm mad. Like I'm losing it. But that's just like, that's how I am. Like I.
Okay, but when you do lose it, do you, okay, so if you messed up the meal, do you throw the eggs on the wall or you just?
Well, I can't now with the baby and okay. stuff. But no,
you
it's just.
Or you're just mad inside? You don't show it.
No, I show it.
You show it?
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're pretty good at keeping it
bottling it in.
Yeah.
Until it. Erupts.
Until he's alone, maybe.
yeah, it might be that. But I also think it's, again, like going back to how you are with your like your closest friends and your family members and stuff. I think that kind of like me lashing out at stuff, even like I come home and I give myself 10-15 minutes when I get home just to rant about the game, rant about my own game, rant about what happened on the ice and whatnot. And then we kind of like close it there, and then we watch TV or we have.
Is that something you guys agreed upon? Like, is that, or is it just a routine?
I honestly develop? Think that kind of just like created and developed itself. Like, because I like at the end of the day, like I come home, I even though it's so focused on my hockey and my career and stuff, I like that's not supposed to ruin her life. Like that's, and because she's such a good support system for me, I think it's enough. Like where I get to rant about it, and then. We talk about something else, we play Yahtzee or whatever it might be.
And, I mean, for those who doesn't know this, she used to play soccer at extremely high level. Now she works TV, soccer. Yes. So I'm sure she has huge understanding of what you go through. Yeah. She's been there herself.
Yeah, and I think she's understanding, obviously, more and more she does the TV stuff. She understands the other side of a thing as well. Obviously, I've gotten to a point where when she came into the picture and the years that we've had together, it's just been like you develop things in terms of systems or whatever you want to call it, just kind of like happens naturally. And it has for us. And I think I'm super, super happy about that because, you know, even though it's my thing, it's a big part of our family, because that's the reason why we're here, why we live here and not in Sweden or somewhere else.
Right.
I think it's just, it's been a good balance overall. And I think I'm super happy that she's gone through something very, very similar. So she has some type of understanding of what's going on.
I think I know the answer to this, but what got you rattled? And I'm sure we have each seen personal, professional manifestations of the rattle, but what got you heated?
You know what bothered me the most in practice? Guys coming in, take a shot, and you could see exactly where they were going, fanned on the shot instead of going top glove, They went 5-hole because they missed a shot. And then they celebrated like they mean to do that. That got me going every time. I had to yell, "You're lucky. Are you kidding me with that shot?" So that got me going every time.
Well, that's interesting. How much is practice define your mental mindset, and how much do you kind of harvest from that practice session as you go into a game? Because I don't think that's talked about a ton.
Well, you know what? I do run a goalie camp back in Sweden. I tell the kids this, that the closer you can be how you feel, how you focus in practice, that will help you going into the game because it will feel pretty natural.
Yeah.
That, you know, compete level and attention to detail, it needs to be in practice. And you can, Mika, you know this, that this closer you get to playoffs, you could feel practices are become more important to the attention to detail. Mm. Sometimes during the season, because you play so many games, a lot of times the practice is more just, yes, you need a break from the game, but you still need to be out there to work on a few things. But mm-hmm. the closer you get to bigger games, more important times of the year, I feel like those practices become more important. But I love to have that high compete level in practice.
Yeah.
Because then it felt pretty similar, you know, when the game started.
Yeah. I always take whatever he says with a grain of salt because he's a goalie, right? And goalies are weird. Is same thing for you, or?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you guys bring up practice, because I've had conversations about practice in terms of, because I'm a huge soccer fan and yeah. I watch a lot of soccer and I watch a lot of like the documentaries that they do and whatever. So it's just in terms of, obviously their time is more than we have for practice, but it's interesting from having different coaches now, how you approach practice and what's important to you and how can that translate into the game? Like in soccer, there is a lot of, obviously they have their conditioning and stuff, but it is a lot of the preparing for the one opponent that you're seeing on Saturday and the way you're playing and the way you want to play your game. For us, it's like Hank said, it depends on the schedule. Like our preparation is obviously practice and you're trying to practice on your own game, but then at the same time, you have two or three options of how you want to play depending on who you're playing.
Two or three games that week.
Yes. And then obviously the scouting and the preparation becomes also right before the game, where you get the scouting report on how they play, how they forecheck, how they power play, penalty kill, and all that stuff. So as a player, depending on, you know, the schedule and how much you play, you know, sometimes we have 25 minute practice, just making sure that the passing are crisp, that the tempo is high, and just making sure that the quality of the practice is good. So I think that's something important, because you get the feel of it. You feel good. You feel good with your passing. You feel good with the motions that you're going through. I think it's easier to translate that into a game.
Obviously, that's a big difference too when you play East versus West, because you travel. You have probably more travel days on the West Coast, so it's harder to have, you know, quality practices. But then the planning becomes more important, and also listen to your bodies.
Right.
Like, how hard can you actually push yourself today? You have to really look at your schedule. How many games have the guys played in the last 5 days, and what's coming up? And that decides a lot of times, you know, how hard the practice should be. And I feel like it's more attention to that now than, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Right.
More attention to how hard they should go. And to your point, Mika, like exactly what are we doing today to make sure we maximize the short time we have?
I think, I mean, it's a very copycat league. Like, now you've watched a lot of other teams more than they have in the past playing. I think playing against those people, like, it's maybe two or three different systems, and we're 32 teams. Like, everyone is playing pretty much the same. And now the game, you asked me earlier, was different when I came here and to now, even just coming into the league to now. I mean, it's so much faster. Everything is so much faster. And your decision making has to be like, the really, really good players, obviously, they buy themselves time to have more options, because now it's a lot of it is just constant pressure, because guys can skate. It's up and down the lineup. It's I would say a different game now than it was when I came in. And
it's been a big change.
Yeah.
13 years.
Yeah.
I mean, how the game is played, how you practice, the numbers. I feel like there's way more information that you guys use now in terms of training and feedback on that.
Yeah.
Because you could see that change around 14, 15, 16, 17.
Yeah.
So, I definitely feel like it's a big difference for you. And you kind of been through it all there.
Yeah, and I think honestly, sometimes even for like how I work as a person, even sometimes too much information is not good. Like if you want to find something bad, then you will find it, because there's so many numbers out there that can point to this and this and that. That's the reason why we're losing, or the other way around as well. Well, we're doing all these things, and that's why we're winning. So it is interesting, and it's fun to be a part of and learn about it and hear how they think, and it's easier to kind of know what to expect coming right in after a game. So yeah.
I mean, you've scored some big goals throughout your career. You have some massive games. Can you give me your like top three games you played in, or like goals you scored? Thinking back, like I top of my head, I know a few, but I want to hear you. You picked them.
I think Washington, the 5-goal game, the overtime goal, is up there just because of the game and how it unfolded. And I felt like everything went in.
5 goals.
Yeah.
For all the listeners here, if you didn't watch that game, you guys scored 5 goals in one game. It's like, yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Because sometimes some games I'm looking at the sheet and I have 0 shots on goal, so I don't even know how I get to 5 goals. But I think that one, obviously, I'm still thinking of the Montreal game 5 in overtime in Montreal. My first year here in the playoffs. And I was actually thinking about that coming here. We had it in the warm-ups, we circle and we shoot and whatever. And
yeah.
I think we talked about this once or twice, but I'm coming in for my shot. We go left wing, right wing, center, and I get my shot right at the end of the warm up. And it's such a late, like it's probably one of my hardest shots, but I hit Hank right in the forehead. And it's before game 5, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I done? This is my first year. I'm still not really talking to Hank right at this point. Like I'm like, oh no, the guy I've been watching for so long and no chance. So I don't really know, like, do I go up and say something, or like I have embarrassed myself? Like I know he's so focused on the game too. So I'm like, oh, I'll just wave a little bit and then kind of curl back. That's the game I score the overtime winner. And that's after the game. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He goes, you can do it anytime as long as we win and you score. I'm like, all right. I like that plan, but I wasn't doing it again. I'm telling you. I don't think I raised the puck over the ice.
Well, it's a risk if you keep hitting me in the head and not scoring. Then we have a problem.
Yeah, I don't think that's
the percentage. That explains a lot, actually, about
the percentage.
Hank. Yeah, after 2017, I noticed a real change.
I might have done some good in the short term, maybe not in the long term. I don't know. I think. So hard to rank them depending on, but
it's hard, but they're up there. You get a good feeling thinking back of those moments. What about disappointment? Anything that happened throughout your career where you feel like, wow, that was a low point?
I think there's been a few. I think losing to Ottawa that year, the same year, 2016, 2017, I felt like we had a really good chance of doing some damage in that playoffs. And then I feel like it was just a chance wasted. And that kind of bothers me still. Going back even further back in my career, I would say an under-18 World Championship final. We played US. We're up 3-1 in the third, lost 4-3 in overtime. It was a tough one. And I think even the Tampa series is 2 years ago is still hard to let go. Knowing that we have 2-0 in game 3 in the middle of the second period, and then obviously lose 4 straight after that. But yeah, there's definitely been a lot of low points, but yeah.
You do talk about, you know, you need to move on, but there's definitely wins to stick with you, but there's losses for sure that stick with you as well. And then kind of shapes you a little bit.
Yeah.
At least for me throughout my career, it gives you motivation. It gives you, you know, when you start a new summer of training, preparing for a new season, it's definitely some of the losses that inspires you to work even harder.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, obviously LA is one of those for you, but what else kind of added fuel to the fire for you preparing for a new season?
Well, I mean, I'm with you. That Ottawa series was tough. Mm-hmm. We had a really good team. Oh, and for me, it's game 7 against Tampa and 15, one win away from the cup finals. For sure, I thought that would be our year after losing the finals the year before. Team was great and managed to win on the road, coming back home and have that opportunity. We fell short. That was a real bummer. But again, I thinking back of the wins and losses, you know, it's funny. You think about how much do you think about the wins and how much do you think about the losses and what gives you the most. Back to, you know, teaching kids, I feel like you learn more from the losses than from the wins.
Yeah.
I think it, like you said, like it's tough to just kind of like move on. And I don't really sometimes understand the meaning of moving on. Like, what does that imply? Like, you just forget about it because you're not. Like, but again, it depends on how you learn from it too. What do you learn from it and what do you do going forward? And you let that be the fuel of something new rather than a burden being like, oh shit, I'm only thinking that we lost, not how can I do something? What can I do something about it? And I think that's also something, a lot of these things are so easy to talk about and say how you should do it. And then it comes to the practical point. It's it's not always as easy. And obviously we're lucky that we play a team sport because we have people to rely on as well. So that's also what your teammates are for.
Is there someone that had a big effect on you as a player or person that kind of inspired you or helped you?
There's been a lot. I think coming into the league, or even just starting in the elite league in Sweden, and then some of them played some years in the NHL as well, getting to hear about their story and how they view things and what mistakes they made that I can learn from. And I think it's when I was obviously coming here, and I've said this before, and it's sometimes it's hard to believe, but even with you coming here, I think for me having seeing like the knowing it's so different from a goalie to a player, but just seeing the competitive side and just how you've managed over the years from playing against you to playing with you and just seeing those things, I think that's helped a lot too. And for me as a player, I think a lot of the goalies are doing a big part in practice. Going back to that, it's a big part. Like I remember Zuki, like, I mean, the way he was celebrating after scoring and just like, it was insane, but it made him also, I feel like it made him better. It made me better because I know I'm not going against a goalie who's not really caring or like it's a warm up shot. So whatever it might be, going into practice thinking, whatever, I'm just like out here trying to like do my thing and then I'm off. Like having someone that I know I need to either fan on a shot or make sure I put it exactly where I want to score, that drives me to be even a better shooter or whatever it might be. It's a different situation. I have to fake the shot to open something else up and get him to get stuck in one position. But there's definitely been a lot of players and obviously coaches as well.
So you relied a lot on veteran players and now you're becoming one of the leaders on this team. Do you think about, you know, the importance of what you say and what you do out there? Because the younger players look at you.
Yeah, I think in terms of leaders, you have a lot of people talk about leaders in terms of being vocal and being able to stand up and when it comes to the media or whatever it might be, just being really good with their words. I'm not. Like I'm not that type of guy. And I've seen other leaders on the teams that I've been that are quiet. They don't say much, but when you go and you watch them on the ice and you watch them prepare and whatever they might do, it's just, it speaks louder than if they would say something. Like that's something I think fits me better in the way I am, and that's something I'm trying to get better at. And I think whatever I do in life, I still have room for growth, and that's what I'm trying to aim for. And I think that it's a weird feeling being just turned 30 and being like now the
one. You're only 30? I thought you were 34.
Yeah, I know. That's Hank years.
Always 4 years or more.
I'm 30 plus tax. But no, it is a weird feeling. Like I still, I mean, it goes by so fast. Yep. Like it's, for me saying I'm going into my 13th year, it feels insane. It's definitely an odd feeling because I've been one of the youngest most of my career and then kind of like in the middle pack and then now getting to a stage where have to be in a different role and not be a different person, but the role kind of changes a little bit.
And if we look at your game quickly, I mean, now when I work a little TV here, I've been watching you closely, and I just feel like when your skating is on point, I feel like you look so confident. You take those first couple of strikes and then you kind of just glide through the defenseman. And if you look at your own game, do you think the skating part is the most important part of your game, or what? When do you feel like your game is just, I'm going to say perfect here. I mean, when you feel so good, like everything is clicking, what do you think is the most important thing for you for that to happen?
The confidence level is definitely a big thing. And for me, it's not just, I get confidence from scoring or being a part of the goal we scored. But I think that's just I think what you said about the skating is you can tell it feels and it looks, when I'm looking back at the game, it looks effortless.
Crisp.
And it's just like I can tell the games I'm struggling, just looking at my skating or looking at my even decision making, in terms of knowing that I can, it doesn't matter confidence or not, I know I can hold on to pucks, I know I can make a certain play. I think that making sure that the mistake is not going to lead to me like being upset or feel like, okay, I'm not making the play after, like I'm not making a play after I made a mistake here, or I didn't make the play I wanted to. I think that's the biggest thing, just to kind of like keep going no matter what, good or bad, just kind of like keep going. And I think almost a little bit of like swagger in my game, like feeling like I belong here. Like that's kind of like taking my space and not waiting for something to happen. I think that's been a big thing overall in my whole life, of like being there and not say sorry for anything.
Really. Yeah. And it's funny too, but when you do really well out there, you tend not to think that much about the game. And when you struggle, you think about the game so much.
Yeah. Sure.
So much that you're almost tired when you get to the ring. Yeah. But my next question, so when you're not doing well, you try to get away from the game. How important is music to you at that point? And I want to get into this. Like, how did your music interest start?
You know, being a Swede, we had, I think going back to school, we had a really, really like talented class of like musicians and singers. So that was kind of like, even from the start, it was in school, we used to go on our breaks and then go play the drums and play the piano, and then people would sing and just like perform and stuff. So that was a thing that went on in my school. I feel like I'm describing High School Musical right now, but that's not it.
Glee.
Sounds amazing.
No, unfortunately, we didn't film it, so we couldn't make a TV show about it. But that's kind of like where it started. And then the whole, like the DJing and producing was from, obviously, Avicii, Swedish House Mafia. Mm-hmm. Alesso came up a little bit later than that. But just all those guys like being in the forefront of that kind of genre, like the electronic music genre, and being so successful, and a lot of people are like, oh wait, Swedes are pretty good at this. And then I think at one point there was like everyone wanted to be a DJ, everyone wanted to be like doing that and producing that kind of music. And I think my brother had a few of his friends, they were doing like graduation parties from high school. That's a big thing back home. So you go out and you have a whatever. So they were setting up those parties. And they were DJing as well. And then some family friends in the music industry. So there's a lot of things that kind of come together. And then, obviously not from 10, I was scratching and I was doing all this stuff, but it came like 16, 17.
I watched some footage from your gig this summer at a festival in Stockholm. It looked incredible.
Yeah.
Like, can you describe the difference and maybe similarities to, you know, score a goal at the Garden versus play your own music in front of thousands of people?
Yeah, it's like the fifth goal against Washington in overtime for an hour. And that's...
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's hard to explain. Like, I get so nervous playing in front of the 5,000 people there. I'm so nervous. And then I play here every night at 20,000. But I said, I don't have anyone to rely on if something goes wrong, if I screw this up. I mean, there is something with music that just makes you happy. And then seeing people dance and people sing and the effect of it gives me something similar to hockey when you're scoring or when you win and you have like that happy feeling and whatnot. And I think with music, it's a little bit easier to control because I'm not playing against anyone. So other than maybe the crowd, if they're not really liking the music, then I'm screwed. But I think it's it's something that I started doing maybe 6-7 years ago, and during the summer, because it's during the summer I'm not chasing the highs of hockey, but it's still something that kind of reminds me of it, and something that's a little bit more relaxed and on my terms in terms of that. So
how much time do you spend in front of the, because a lot of time you're in front of the computer, right?
Yeah.
That's how you create music.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just walk through with us here? How does it start? If you want to create a beat or a song, mm-hmm. How do you start? Where do you start?
I mean, I hope not a whole lot of producers and musicians listening to this, but no, I think it's, I've seen like,
what do you do? I don't care what they do. What do you do?
I honestly, like, I'm really, really into melodies. And it's not just like the stuff that I play at a show. For example, the show I had this summer, obviously the whole hour is not my own music. Like it's stuff that I'm, if you want to call it like an edit or a mashup or whatever it might be, just trying to create my own version of maybe two songs together or whatever it might be. So even before that gig, I'm sitting for hours and just making sure, okay, what do I want to play? I know I have an hour. I know approximately this many songs. And what do I want to play? Like, what do I want to represent when I'm up there? Mm. But then I go in front of my computer to try and create the music. I'm not making a lot of songs to a festival now. It's a little bit different. Like I do a little bit more pop stuff. I try to like, and try to find other genres to kind of like play around with. But melodies are a big thing for me. Like I could even listen to another song and just I could catch myself like hum a different melody on top of that song. And then I record it on my, it sounds so terrible, on my voice notes, and I save and I go back home and I have to do it right away. Because if I don't kind of remember it and I listen to it, I'm like, I don't even know where it starts or where it ends. Right. So a lot of voice notes on my phones. Mm-hmm.
This happen on the way home from practice?
Oh yeah.
If so I'm listening, like, I have to get home now and record this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, and for me, it's just like, depends, because it kind of goes in like waves of how. This summer, the gig really like helped me like feeling like, oh, I want to do this again and I want to do it more and I want to do more music. From COVID and until now, 4 years almost, I didn't play. So it was just like, I'm creating music I know I might not release and I don't have anywhere to play it. Hmm. So, but yeah, to answer your question, it's a lot of melodies and then I kind of work around it to see like what the vibe is from that.
So do you listen to other bands to get inspired? Like what, do you listen to other types of music?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of it now is sampled music, like, and has been for some time. Like you I think it's just finding inspiration of like, oh, this really cool bass and that one song here that's not even the genre I'm doing or the type of song I'm doing. I think that's pretty cool to find, like, okay, so I could probably do something similar to that, or like the vibe or the sound of that, I can bring this here because that will go really well with what I want to do. So I think just listening to music kind of helps that too, of finding like, oh, I like this song, but I would have done it different. Mm-hmm. Like I would have done it this way. And I think it sounds really good.
It's like a skill unto itself though, being able to peel back the layers of the onion and just say, oh, this bass track or this rhythm guitar section. Mm-hmm. And most people listen to music kind of in the entirety of it. And they hear the fullness of all of it.
Yeah.
Being able to cut the different channels out. Is that something that you've always had?
Not until I started, like I bought my first software where I can create my own music. Like that's, and then more and more you listen to it. And obviously you put your hours into doing something that you're interested in or that you like, then you're starting to find like, okay, so like I will talk to someone that has produced a lot of music or produced for a lot of years, and I'll talk to them just to kind of see like, well, what do you think? What do you do? How do you work? And then it kind of catches, like, even like when I've gone out, like I'm so like damaged in my head that a lot of times, like, cause I don't go out clubbing anymore, but when I did, I'm listening. I'm like, I'm staring right in up in the sky and I'm listening to the mix of the DJ, like, okay, was that a good mix? Was that like, oh, okay, that was really cool. Like,
you're critiquing.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. Like, it's like damage. And I'm not saying like I'm nowhere near to be like a world's greatest DJ, but in my head, I'm thinking this is the way I do it, and it seemed to work for me. But what do other people do? And then it's just like, I'm standing there and just listening to these guys. And I'm like, okay, that wasn't a good mix. Like, I know that, like, for me, that was not a good mix the way he came in with a song or her or whatever it might be. But so yeah, it is a lot of fun to have something like that as well.
Yeah. I'm sure it feels good to, obviously, to progress and to build on success. Like, where does the music career go from here?
I don't know. I'm kind of like, I'm just trying to like keep that little flame going as long as I think it's fun to do.
Yeah.
But then again, there's a lot of things happening. And now, obviously, with the baby too, that kind of changed things.
Yeah.
To see if I can have her at one of the shows one time. I don't know. Like,
speaking of future, looking at this season now, what's your expectation? And what's your goal for the team and for yourself?
The expectations are to win. If you look at the past winners, there's been different ways of winning and different roads of getting there. And I think the expectations to win, we say we want to win the Stanley Cup, is not going to mean just because some teams won the Stanley Cup that they went 82-0 or 73-9. Like, that's not some of the realistic stuff. Like, so for me, I think it's making sure that we build something throughout the season that's not just a process, but also results, obviously, so we get into the playoffs and get a chance to play, but building something that will become more of our identity for the team, like trusting that process of getting there. Like, this is going to be the best way for us to get a chance to win. And I think, obviously, for me, you always want to top your year, the previous year, become a better version of myself as a hockey player and mature even more off the ice as well. So I think, yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to watch you. We're going to root for you and the Rangers, of course, and wish you all the best. I'm obviously going to work the network as well and pay close attention to your game, but I wish you all the best, Mika.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for coming on the club.
And yeah, congrats, Dad.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks for hanging with us.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks again to Mika for joining us here at Club 30. It was great to see him again, catching up. Obviously, so many things happening in his life. New father, starting a new season with the Rangers. And I mean, the guy is a superstar in this league now. So I'm excited for him. He's such a great guy.
Yeah, me too. I hope he gets to play in an All-Star game. He was voted an All-Star last year and didn't get to play. And he deserves that recognition. You know, obviously... Yeah, I think he's a top five guy in the league.
And we talked about this on this show, right? With when you start playing the way he's been playing the last couple of years, there's more pressure and expectations. And we definitely got into that today. And it was interesting to hear his take on it.
Yeah.
And the music obviously plays a huge part in his life now. So I loved it. It was great to see him again and catch up. And I wish him all the best this season.
It's all about balance with him. You know, it felt like everything, he had this kind of unique algorithm of balance, and he seems like he has it figured out. And I hope that carries through for him in fatherhood, because that's the real challenge.
It is. I hope you guys enjoy the sit down with me, Jay, and Mika. And until next time, all the best to you guys.
Thanks, guys. Please like, subscribe, and comment. We would love to welcome you as Club 30 members.
Take care, guys.